Hey guys, Taylor Kovar here. I just wanted to take a brief moment before we get started on this episode. And on behalf of myself and the entire Millionaire Marriage team, I just want to say thank you to all the men and women who have served our country. Your bravery and your sacrifice have not gone unnoticed. Thank you for all that you do. God bless.
Hey everybody, welcome back to the Millionaire Marriage. I'm here with Taylor Kovar. And we have a special guest with us today, Pastor Doug Hogsten. He has an accomplishment list that I could write a book about, but just a few of them. Pastor Hogsten was a military chaplain for 12 years. He retired from the Army as a major. He's pastored multiple churches. He's an accomplished author, sought after speaker, and we are honored to have him on our podcast today. Pastor Hogsten, thanks for coming.
Oh, great. It's great to be here. Yeah. Thank you.
So when we were deciding some guests that we wanted to bring on, I brought your name up because you've got so much life experience, but specifically we deal with marriage a lot. And you went downrange twice. And for those who don't know what that means, that you were deployed twice to Afghanistan. And so we do have some questions for you, but can you tell us a little bit about your experience in Afghanistan?
Sure. I was actually at Fort Leonardwood, Missouri, where I was the basic trainee chaplain, an OSET chaplain, which deals with basic trainees and AIT students, you know, soldiers. And I was teaching classes on deployments and how to emotionally and relationally reconnect for people that went downrange. The problem was I had a slick sleeve, which in the military means this arm, the right arm, does not have a deployment patch on it. And I thought, well, that's a little weird, you know, me teaching these classes and I've not been downrange. And so I requested to leave early so that I could go with a unit that was deploying. During that period of time, a missionary from Afghanistan called my mother-in-law and asked if I was in Afghanistan. And she said, no, he's at Fort Leonard Wood. She did not know that I had put in for a unit that was going to be deployed. So when I got to Germany, my chaplain assistant said, well, sir, it looks like we're going to Iraq. I said, I don't think so. I think we're going to Afghanistan. And he said, no, we're having briefings on Iraq, sir. That's where we're going. No, I've got the inside story. I said, we're going to Afghanistan. And sure enough, we were there, of course. And my first deployment was 12 months. And then the military, you know, at 12 months, they have to send you for a 2-week vacation, you know, back home. And but or anywhere in the world, they would send you. So to reduce cost, they went to deployment, 9-month deployments, so they did not have to do that. My first deployment was in RC South, which is around the Kandahar area, and it was pretty intense. You know, I prayed for many soldiers, families that had died, 16 the first month, and wow. It was very intense. And then the second was not as much. It would be about a year and a half later, and that was in RC East, but we were rocketed every day there. So there was a lot of hostility. And we were there. It was on the news where FOB Ghazni was attacked. Insurgents had a 4,000-pound explosive, and they breached the wall, 10 suicide bombers. At the same time, we were being rocketed, and that was a very intense day. Wow. And so the service that I ran there was called the Sunday Night Explosion, no pun intended, and the liveliest service in Afghanistan. So, yeah. So during that time, during our first deployment, my wife and kids were in Germany. And so they were all around in Germany. The second, they were in New York. So out of Fort Drum.
So, wow.
Yeah.
So you can tell us, what made you decide to be a military chaplain? And two, I have a friend that's in the process of becoming one, and I just thought, you got a license to preach. You just go to the military and say, hey, I want to be a military chaplain. What does that even look like to become a military chaplain?
Yeah, so of course you have to have a BA starting, then you have to have a Master of Divinity. A Master of Divinity at that time, 2007, it was about a 90-hour master's. I think they reduced
huge program.
It. Yeah,
wow,
yeah,
huge program.
Yeah. So during the master's program, I went to the Church of God Theological Seminary, now called the Pentecostal Theological Seminary, out of Cleveland, Tennessee. And they introduced me to, I didn't even know about the chaplaincy. And so I learned about it from there. And
you were in the Army before, though.
I was enlisted from 84 to 87 and then out for 22 years.
Yeah. Oh, gotcha.
And so I had a lot to overcome, though. I mean, I was extremely fat, and so, you know, as I was getting
just
older.
Just to be blunt. Yeah, yeah, right. There you go. Okay, yeah. If you're watching on YouTube, you will see he's not extremely fat, so yes.
Well, I still need to work on that, but I was really, you know, so there was a lot to overcome, and I was in my 40s, and so, but I just really felt led, and so we started the paperwork. I was endorsed after I had my master's. I was endorsed with the Church of Our Lord Jesus Christ of the Apostolic Faith out of the Bronx, New York, and I was endorsed for the chaplaincy by them, and while I was in, the Army paid for another master's in marriage and family therapy, which I got in 2018.
So he's an underachiever, and he also is in the middle of his PhD in Bible exposition?
Yes.
Yeah. So here, just kind of, and I've obviously heard your story before about going to Afghanistan, and I think what comes to mind and a question I have is, how did you keep yourself together? Like, what was, because that, as a civilian, and you know, I work with a clinic that works solely with our service members and their families, but just hearing some of that, I mean, it makes me emotional. I wasn't even there. I know some of our listeners may not even understand, but I really want, this is important for people to understand what our men and women go through over there. And we do want to talk about marriage and what that looks like for our service members, but how did you keep yourself together?
It's a great question. The deck is actually stacked against soldiers, and I hate to say it this way, but when I was in Germany, they routinely had a commercial, and at the end of the commercial for the AFN for all the soldiers, so and at the end of the commercial, it would say, "And remember, combat changes everything, including you." So the implication was, you're going to be screwed up. Yeah. And PTSD was on the rise. So I started doing research on PTG, post-traumatic growth. Mm-hmm. And so my mindset, and I would do briefings with my soldiers about the mindset of, you can come away from deployment more complete. You don't have to come back screwed up. Man. And I really believed that. And so I'd say I reject this idea that you're, I realize PTSD is a real thing. Yeah. I don't deny that. But there is a possibility that you can, but if you go into that knowing, hey, I could get something out of this, something
that's
beneficial.
Option.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And so that's what I tried to impress upon our soldiers. And the command was real supportive, but the literature on PTG was very sparse at the time. But if you research it now, there's more out there available for soldiers, and I would certainly encourage that. But that's how I came in with that mindset. I also came in with the mindset that love, you know, there are several ways to view love. If you believe love is only an emotion, right? That's going to be detrimental.
We've talked about this, yes.
Or if you believe love is just an act. I'm not saying love is not any of those things, but if you're only, that's also detrimental. When you leave for deployment, you better understand that at this point, love is a choice and it's a commitment. And when you come in understanding that the act may not be there, the emotions are going to be fluctuating, but love is a choice, a commitment. I married Missy in 1988, and we have 5 kids. 2 sets of twins and one in between. And so never a dull moment.
That's a whole another episode. Yeah,
absolutely. So I was committed. And so that's what I did. Now, being an officer, I had a phone, you know. And so, but soldiers all, we mostly had access to a MWR, acronym escapes me, but MWR had a computer set up so they could do Skype or they could do, you know, the equivalent. I don't think Zoom was available, but Skype was the big thing then. And so they could routinely talk to their loved ones. The divorce rate was high, though. Mm-hmm. And I don't know how many, just in my unit, you know, there would be affairs that were going on while the soldier was downrange. And really, that was really bothersome. But it's because, you know, what most extramarital affairs are about friendship, about support and concern. And so, but if you're not committed, If you do not view the sanctity of marriage, you know, that's what's so important.
Yeah. And I think that's one thing we've talked about is marriage is a covenant, not a contract.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And so, but kind of going back to how you kept yourself together downrange, it's this idea, I think you went into it with a different mindset than others did, that I don't have to be messed up as a result of this. I can't actually use this time of adversity, trauma, crisis to cause us to grow.
Yeah, and I think that's really important, is having that mindset going in. I mean, one, you were older.
Sure.
Then most of the soldiers, I'm assuming, that were there.
Yeah, 19, 20, yeah. 21, 22. Yeah.
And so I think, you know, knowing that, one, you're committed to your spouse, she's committed to you, you guys have already built a life together, and you're not going to do something to mess that up. And you want the best for her. So I would love to know what her thoughts were, what that conversation was 22 years after you leave the military, saying, hey, I think I'm going to volunteer to go to Afghanistan for 12 months. How did that conversation work out with you and Missy?
You know, she was always real supportive and excited, and saw that really, honestly, nobody that knew me believed this would be a fit. They thought that I would not do well as a military chaplain, mainly because you're in a pluralistic environment,
yeah.
Right? And
yeah,
so
yeah,
they
sure.
didn't think I would do well with pluralism. And I did do well because I honestly said, pluralism is a myth, and so
there you go. Yeah,
I was who I am. I was myself.
Yeah. Yeah,
that conversation was. I mean, I'm certain that she worried and was concerned. I journaled, and she journaled, so that was interesting. And we've shared, you know, of course, since then. I didn't explain everything that I've seen over there, of course.
Yeah,
but so we kept in communication. We did little things like that. You know, she would send me boxes of Cheez-Its, and I love Cheez-Its, and sponsor us, Cheez-Its.
Yeah, that's exactly so, right.
You're definitely coming back to another episode.
That's
yeah.
right.
But,
we're trying to get Chick-fil-A to sponsor us, Apple, now Cheez-Its. There it is.
Yeah, right. So it was exciting. I think the most scary times for her is when we were on blackout, when we're not allowed to communicate. That was the hardest hardest times, but that was very few, you know, but anytime there was an incident, they shut down all communications. And fortunately, the Army system is antiquated. And usually, I mean, seriously, if somebody dies, they're liable to find out on Facebook.
Wow.
Instead of, I've had to do, what do you call, where you go and tell spouses that,
yeah.
And usually they already know. And so the system needs to be updated.
Yeah.
But yeah.
So talk to us a little bit about what it's like, and not necessarily what it's like, but how do you keep a marriage healthy? Because I know you saw this. Obviously, you dealt with it yourself, but then also in the lives of people that you were a chaplain over. How do you keep marriage alive and thriving under those types of circumstances? Because there's a lot of distance. And so while some of our listeners may not be in the military, but they do know what it's like to work from a distance or have ministry at a distance, whether they're evangelizing or whatever the case may be, which that's a whole different topic to talk about.
Right.
But how did you, and then what would you recommend for those who have this, not just a long distance relationship, but there's distance in marriage, physical distance?
Right. So you remember the old song you used to say, well, they say that absence makes the heart grow fonder and that tears are only rain to make love grow. Well, there is some truth in that. There was a study in 2017 and 2020 that actually does support that. But it's kind of incongruent because, like, the divorce rate in the Army was on the rise. And
yeah.
So a little incongruency there, and I don't know exactly. So the question there, you have to be intentional. That's the only thing I mean, you've got to communicate. And, you know, the book of Proverbs talks about this in I believe it's the 7th chapter, where it talks about the simple, the naive guy that goes walking down the street and It's a fascinating passage because the woman's there waiting on him and she says, "Hey, I've got everything prepared just for you." And like an idiot, you know, he says, he says, "Oh, yeah." And but if you research the Hebrew there, the word used for this individual is emotionally immature. And so when you're emotionally immature and when you view love in such a superficial way, and so you have to view love correctly. That's the number one.
Yeah.
And yeah, write it for me because I'll forget it. But, you know, you have to do that. So that's so important. And then take advantage. I will say it does something really emotional. Let me tell you one story. It's kind of embarrassing, but it's, yet it reveals my heart. I can't hardly even talk about it without, I remember I was so, my boys were about, my youngest set of twins were about 8. And so I was in the desert here. And so I had arranged with Missy to purchase, what do you call those, the little games like the
Game Boys.
Yeah, like the Game Boys that they had wanted. And I wanted to her to put it in the mailbox. And then go out to the mailbox and get it as from me. And I was so excited. Well, on the phone, she said, "Hey, we saw those Game Boys at the PX, and I just went ahead and bought them." I mean, I was crushed. I mean, I'm in the desert, and I had to walk away from soldiers. And I began to weep, and I kept thinking to myself, this is illogical. But distance does something.
Yeah.
And plus, you're in a hostile environment, too, at least in the military setting. And or if you're at work, you may be under stressful conditions. I don't know what it might be.
Yeah.
But usually the distance that we have is we didn't choose that. Something happened where we do it for work or for whatever reason. But I remember I was crushed and I kept thinking, you know, why did she knew that I wanted to do this, but she didn't know how big of a deal it was to me. I guess I didn't either. Oh. And so I'm, you know, melting there. I remember I'm on a sand dune and I'm looking at just desert all around me and just weeping. You know, and it took, I can't even think about it today without, you know, tearing up because it was just so that you must be intentional. So for myself, the soldier over there, they have expectations, right? And but the one that's left behind, whether it's the husband or the wife, they've got another role too. And so she did not say, "Let's get Doug." And she wasn't doing that. But so emotionally, you are raw. So you have to do things intentional to navigate through this. Journaling for me, I'm a writer, and journaling for those that are not, texting would be not, you don't send it to anyone in particular, but you just text your emotions and then process through that.
So what would you say to the person on the other side, right? So if your spouse is in the military and you're stateside, or maybe your spouse is one traveling regularly, I'll get it out there, for business or ministry in your home, what would you tell that person? What are some things they can do to, on their end, be intentional about them keeping the relationship with their traveling spouse alive? Because I think that's a concern as well. Because I think what you were mentioning was, especially in the military, there's both sides, right? There were the soldiers having affairs, but then there are people stateside having the affairs as well. Yeah. I do know it takes both sides, but what would you tell the person? I have a lot of things that come to mind, but what would you tell that person that it's their spouse who's, you know, in the sandbox, or it's their spouse who's the one traveling? How could you help them be intentional?
Yeah, that is not easy because you might actually, well, I would recommend being involved in a support group. So the military is filled with those. So that the people like-minded whose spouse is also. And so I would encourage that and to communicate that you're involved with that to the one that's downrange or away, that you're, because you're keeping the fire.
Yeah.
You're not just out going to Paris, you know, in Europe, you know, but you're not just traveling. But again, you don't want to stay home, but you're just doing intentional things, pictures.
Yeah.
I mean, there's so much communication. I guess that's the time where cell phones and internet is really can be a good thing.
Yeah.
Normally they're not conducive, you know, they're not
we
conducive.
Agree.
Right. They're not conducive for relationships. However, long distance, you can help with that. Yeah. And so you communicate the best way you can. The difficulty, the real challenge is coming back. So we would find soldiers because there's been a role reversal. And so she has to, if it's the spouse is a woman or if the spouse is a man, they are now, they have had charge for 12 months. They have flipped roles and it's not easy. And so the soldier comes back thinking they're going to immediately go back to what it was.
Yeah.
And it doesn't, and especially if she's better at it than you, you might have to negotiate something.
Yeah.
You might have to recognize something. And so oftentimes soldiers would come and that just exacerbated their own, hey, she does this better. Or, and now I discipline the kids and she's up in arms because I discipline. So there's a host of challenges that, and so we would always have pre-deployment or post-deployment briefings where, don't kick your dog and, don't beat your wife. And you always have to go through this litany because there was always trouble. And for our soldiers, because when you're downrange, you cannot drink. And so when you came back, especially in Europe, our soldiers invariably got in trouble. But I always felt like it's because they had no purpose. They had purpose in Afghanistan. And so I argued that, I did interviews with soldiers and I say, what's your purpose here downrange? And they tell you immediately, I'm a gunner, blah, 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 whatever it is, their assignment. I said, what's your purpose when you get back stateside? I sat on and wait to be released, or I cut grass. And so I encouraged the command. I said, we have got to, what kind of purpose is that? No wonder you're getting drunk. And, and that's what they would do. They felt like they had no purpose. And so having purpose is really important. And the spouse can help with that.
Mm-hmm.
And so that is another way to renegotiate that and to feel, it's horrible to get calls from downrange or long distance and that spouse to say, hey, we've done this and this, and it's so much more smooth than when you're here.
So don't do that.
Right.
I mean, I have a million questions and I've asked a lot, but Taylor, what do you give?
Yeah, so I'm just soaking. I have like a whole page of notes over here. I'm just quiet, taking notes. I'm letting the two marriage family therapists talk. How do you help? So I love how you talked about your purpose. And I think that's something we lack a lot. I own an investment firm. One of the very first questions I ask people is, why are you working? Right. So what's your purpose of working, and why are you looking to make investments or create a financial plan?
Sure.
What's the purpose of it? Because if you don't know, we can't make that specific and measurable, we're going to be lost. So how do you help couples, and especially soldiers who are trying to make home, find that purpose when they've been so focused on being in the sandbox for a year? How do you help them transition back? What do some of those conversations look like?
So the week they're back, they're not immediately released, right? So they go through a litany of different training, communication training to reintegrate back into a sense of normalcy. And so we would do that just by teaching classes, The Army's full of PowerPoint. I realize that's not always the best, but they would try to offer counseling. And so we have a multitude of counselors in the military to work through these things. That's why there's chaplains that have marriage and family therapy degrees. There's, they send them to school for that so they can help with these maybe the five love languages. No, I said that on purpose for you.
I love this guy.
He'll take shots at me.
It would training and teaching.
Yeah.
And it's, to me, the main thing is your understanding of love. If you can get that down pat, you can just survive about anything.
Yeah.
If you understand that as a commitment, and of course, if you have the Lord, that's the main thing to me.
Okay, I have got this question. I really want your take on it. So, and I'll try to. I need to make this as ambiguous as possible because I'm working with a couple,
sure,
military, and I think one of the challenges that I'm seeing with them is So he's since been honorably discharged. Mm-hmm. And I think one of the challenges I'm seeing, I think this can be applicable for more than just military, but specifically with this, is they both, I don't know if they don't understand what each other went through apart from one another. Because he's saying, I mean, my buddies were blown up daily and you're calling me about these trivial things. And she's saying, well, these trivial things are keeping my family, keeping this family together. And I know we talk about empathy, but how do you help somebody that they are both going, you're not seeing things from my perspective? Yes, I understand it was hard at home, but I mean, I almost died yesterday. You see what I'm saying?
Yes.
And so what would you, and obviously I think you can make an applicable application that's broader than the military, but how do you help, from your estimation, how do you help couples see things from their spouse's perspective? Because if it's important for you, I say it all the time, if it's important for your spouse, it should be important to you. But having that kind of empathy for your spouse's situation, because while no, one spouse may not know what it's like to get blown up, they're also dealing with X number of, right, you guys had five kids. They're dealing with all these kids and all these problems, and it's their challenges are real too. What are your thoughts about that?
Yeah, I would say it pales in comparison. But yeah, that's just
because you were over there, yeah, right. Yeah, right.
So, but what I guess I would, if they were in front of me, I would have them do an exercise. And this doesn't fix anything.
Yeah.
But an exercise where they, and I'd put on some music, and for 5 minutes, they are not to do anything but hold hands and look each other's eye and look at each other's eyes. You know, something very simple, and understand that they both went through struggles.
Yes.
And even though one may be worse on a scale, or at least appear that way, it doesn't mean the other was non-existent.
Yeah.
And so I would certainly encourage that kind of discussion.
Yeah.
And maybe he should open up. It sounds to me like he really has not opened up. He's told what happened, but he is not emotionally been vulnerable.
Yeah.
I mean, it's easy to say, well, I saw, you know.
Yeah.
But to really explain that, I told my wife that for the first month, I may mention this, that 16, I remember going into the morgue with 16 body bags, and I would lay hands on, I'd have them unzip, and I'd lay hands and pray for the family. So much so that the commander said, they forbid me to do that anymore. They would not allow me. But it was intense. And I watched them lead, and I understand what they had to do. It was in undercover at night when they would transport these bodies. Two helicopters would come in and they'd have to throw these bodies. But I watched them indignantly and stack them. And it just, I was so offended. Yeah. I mean, they were doing their job. But I really had to talk to my wife about that. I had to, you know, could she identify? No, but it doesn't matter. You have to talk. That soldier has not really talked.
So here's what I think I'm hearing is, even though situations are different, because especially when it comes to our service men and women and people stateside, their experiences are different, but their experiences are real. And so for each person to continue to remain emotionally connected, even though they may not exactly know what their spouse is going through, it's still being, though they may not know, and mine may be quote unquote worse or not, I need to remain emotionally connected with my spouse, even during all the craziness.
One thing he's forgotten, and I should say that, because I don't mean that at all in a trite way.
Yeah.
Because she's not only dealing with the trivial matters, she's also worried about her spouse that's over there. So she's got a ton of emotional stuff going on.
Yeah.
I mean, can you imagine the fear if there's if there is a shutdown in communication, if they see on the news that something has happened and they don't know. So that's a huge, so what may seem, and so there seems to be no comparison.
Yeah.
But I would amp that.
Yeah.
And I would remind that soldier, she had him on her mind also.
Yeah.
And that's huge. That's so that's stuff. An emotional.
That's good stuff.
So
yeah, I think opening up emotionally is extremely important. And we see this, I mean, you know, non-military related. So just for everybody, not in military, in a like a C-suite type executive or an entrepreneur, yes. You know, they're dealing with things day in, day out the other spouse is not typically,
sure.
You know, if you have a stay-at-home wife and you have someone else who's running businesses, it's two very different stresses. And so it's applicable either way of, hey, you've got to be able to open up and say, well, like, here's where I am coming from. Here's my stress, right? I didn't have a worse day than you. And we see this a lot with couples of saying, well, let me tell you about my day, right? First off, Timmy threw up on me. Then we were late to daycare. And then that threw my Starbucks, like, you know, whatever it is. And it's not we're keeping score, but it is being able to open up and connect and be raw with each other and being honest.
Right.
And so I know with me and my wife, we deal with this pretty routinely of, hey, Liz, let me just tell you from my standpoint. I know, like, I may have went crazy earlier and I was short with this.
Yeah.
This is my non-man moment, right? Take the traditional masculine role
right,
off.
Right.
Oh, sorry. No, Siri, I will not try again. And so, but just take a moment and be real and try to open up and say, here's what's really affecting me. Right? Here's what's really going on and why I may have reacted that way. And with our military, I think it's the exact same thing, right? Yeah. Going back and saying, hey, this is, I know I reacted this way, but I want to respond. I want to fill you in more of where I'm at. Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. We could keep going on and on. Like, my brain is just flooded with, and I see you every day. We work together all the time, but thank you so much for coming on.
Oh, it's
and
been my
I know
honor.
That this episode,
do it again.
Yes,
I would love
absolutely.
To. Yeah. I mean, I have a whole page of notes here. I was like, okay, how can I process this?
I know this episode, it's going to be a blessing for our listeners. For the Hawkston, thanks for coming on. We appreciate it. Thanks for taking time out of your day.
Thank you guys. Appreciate it very, very much.